we at the Fade Route dedicate this episode to Jack Canosa. Once a tiger, always a tiger. Coming at you from the Hey Yo Studios, it's the Fade Route with D and Z. Here are your hosts, D and Z.
Coming at you live from the Ayo Studio.
Ayo.
It's the Fade Route with D and Z. I am D. We've got a great show for you tonight. Mets may have a toxic clubhouse. We are blindsided by Michael Orr and the story behind the blindside. And the Tubby Hooks' Danny Butler joins us on the In Route. But we'll begin today's show with some news out of the AFC East. Got some action. A few veteran running backs getting a job this year. The New England Patriots signed Zeke Elliott. And then the We Are a Quarterback Away Jets signed Dalvin Cook. Z, which player will have more success this season?
Well, it all depends on how they're used, really. If you look at the Jets depth chart, you know, they activated Breece Hall as well from PUP.
A day later, right?
Right.
Or so a day before. Have,
it's unbelievable. No, I think it's a day after.
So, a day after, right? So
retarded. Yeah, so you have Breece Hall, Dalvin Cook, Michael Carter's still there, Bam Knight is still there.
Bam Knight
is gonna eventually be the best out of all. But you're running four deep with the Jets. Dalvin Cook is a luxury, and he's an affordable luxury. 1 year, $8.6 million. Well, we were right. He wasn't coming for five, right? He came for almost nine. So you figure, you know, with his name recognition and you're not, and the fact that you don't want to rush Breece Hall back, he's going to get the primary burn. But that's still a passing team. As long as Aaron Rodgers is there, the lion's share of the snaps are going to go through the air. If you look at the Patriots, Bill Belichick always likes to consider himself, anyways, pre-Brady, a run team, right? It was always a balanced attack, right? Even when Brady was doing his thing, you had a guy like a Corey Dillon, a Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. You had guys moving the ball. Sony Michel later on. Zeke has to upset or, you know, he has to upend Ramondre Stevenson. Ramondre Stevenson, who's a good running back. Like, I don't know if he's an every down running back. Like, Damian Harris is no longer there. He's in Buffalo. So Zeke is really filling in that Damian Harris role. I think that in the end, just because of sheer numbers, right? If the sheer, you know, depth chart of it all, Zeke is going to have more of an impact because, for one, he's only got to beat out one guy instead of three, and he's going to get more opportunity than Dalvin Cook will probably get. And later on in the year, that may change things, you know, a little bit. As the year goes on, and if the Jets are in a good position, right, they may not need to have number eight slinging the ball like he's wont to do. They might be able to put it in the deep freeze a little bit. So that shift might kind of favor Cook. But in the current landscape, in the current situations that both teams are in, that both players are in, I gotta say, Zeke has a better chance of making a better impact than Dalvin Cook right now.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is like you were talking about Zeke upending Stevenson, but he really doesn't even have to, right? I mean, he could just really hawk goal line carries.
True.
And he can be good in short yardage. I mean, here's the deal. Everyone says Zeke's on the slide, but could I interest you in 876 yards and 12 touchdowns?
Yes.
Could I interest you in that?
Yes.
I mean, I get his yards per carrier down. I think it went down. I think it was like it started at 5, then it was like at 4.6, 4.2, and then last season it was under 4. But, I mean, come on. He's not worth he's not worth $10 million a year. And I know he's going to be a goal line hawk for the Patriots. That's the whole thing. And the truth is, Stevenson struggled last year in the red zone. And he struggled on the goal line, and he struggled in short yardage. Zeke is not going to struggle, man. He's going to run. He's going to run through people. And let's see, in the goal line in last season, In 2 seasons, Stevenson has a total of 10 touchdowns. Last year, Zeke alone had 12. I mean, Stevenson might be the back of the future, but the Patriots have a nice two-headed monster right now. Now, when you look at the Jets, Dalvin Cook on the Jets. I mean, who knows, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, a day, like you said, a day after or a day before, whatever, they take Breece Hall off the PUP, and all they've been talking about is how great Breece Hall is going to be, how fresh he's going to be. He's ahead of schedule, and we're going to be great with Breece Hall. And then you got Michael Carter saying, I don't know what's going on here, because last year they brought in Robinson towards the end of the season after Breece Hall went down. Meanwhile, he was toting the rock pretty good, and now you're going to go and sign Cook? How do you think that makes Michael Carter feel? It just seems like a crowded backfield. I don't know who's going to tote the rock. I don't know who the load's going to be on. For a team that was only a quarterback away, they've signed quite a lot of free agents this year. And that's not the answer all the time, is just to have a lot of talent.
No, it's true. And I got to say, like, which one of the Jets' running backs is proficient at pass blocking? Like, that's gonna be helpful to them. That's gonna help weed out who gets a bulk of the playing time. Because your left tackle right now, because you're waiting on Mekhi Becton, and you don't know if Mekhi Becton is going to make it back. Your left tackle, your blindside tackle, is Billy Turner. He's not good. He's not good.
I mean, but here's the deal. It's like, if you're asking who's the best running back on the team right now, it's Dalvin Cook, right?
Oh, in name only, yes.
How are you going to say in name only? The last 4 years, the guy's had over 1,000 yards every single season. Yeah, his per attempt has gone down last season, but he's only 27 years old. I mean, how could he not be? Breece Hall's coming off of a serious knee injury, and Michael Carter's only like 5'9". You're really going to say that you're not sure? You're really going to say by name only?
It's by name only. Yeah. He's suffered injury problems too. So yeah, let's not be real. Let's be
very
real.
Very true. But he played all 17 games last year.
He did.
So
that's a plus in his favor. But he's also not in camp on time. That's another factor. Like, what shape is he keeping himself in? Is he in football ready shape? Is he in there's a difference, right? There's a difference between being in shape and then being in football shape. You get the shit beat out of you in a football game.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real here. Is Dalvin Cook physically ready to take the pounding that he's used to taking?
Mm-hmm.
The one good thing, though, is, like, last year he had Madison. This year, he could be even fresher.
Because
you got Carter. You can run some two-back sets. You can do some fun, interesting things. Never mind, it's Nathaniel Hackett. But if you had an offensive coordinator who, like a Kyle Shanahan, who kind of is an innovator, or... He's kind of an innovator.
I'm kind of a big deal around here.
He's kind of a big deal. You know, his running backs are great. Like, quarterback is the issue there. Like, keeping your quarterback upright. But running backs, he can do really good things with running backs. Now, if you had a guy like Kyle Shanahan with this kind of backfield, you can do some really interesting things. Now's the time for Nathaniel Hackett to get into the lab here and start coming up with some ideas. And, of course, run them by 8, because you need to run them by 8. But in terms of, like, right now, I gotta say, like, Zeke intrigues me from the Jamal Williams standpoint. Jamal Williams led the league in touchdowns last year for a rusher, or a rushing back, running back, rather.
Very good valid point, yeah.
Yeah, so where did he get those? He hawked them on the goal line.
Hawked it. Hawked the shit out of it.
Yeah, so that's what Jamal Williams did. You're telling me Zeke can't do what Jamal Williams did? What? I'm pretty sure he can.
Yeah, not only that, but not for nothing, Zeke is much more intimidating on a 3rd-and-2 or a 3rd-and-4 or a 3rd-and-goal than any of those other backs. I'm sorry. Like, he, and the Patriots got him at a bargain. A bargain. I think you said for a Cook, they're paying like $6 million or $8 million.
Yeah, Zeke 1 year, 8.6.
Yeah, I think Zeke's only getting like a mil five. And I think he's getting like a $600,000 signing bonus. Like, he got nothing for this. Like, they got him on the cheap. And that's the whole thing, is like, the Patriots are going with the discount, right? They're going with the coupon guy, you know? It's like, yeah, we could pay X amount of dollars for Dalvin Cook, but who's cheaper, Dalvin Cook or Zeke Elliott? And for some reason, Zeke Elliott's a lot cheaper because, like I said, people think he's on the slide, which I don't
We call that a make-good contract.
Yeah.
And I think Zeke is definitely going to make good on that.
Right, and that's just the Patriots being the Patriots, man. Remember they got that kid, Chris Hogan?
Yes.
Like Chris, number 15, tearing it up. Guy was like cut by Buffalo, like couldn't get a job, and he wound up being the best, one of the best receivers on the team that year.
But dude was a lacrosse player.
He was contemplating going to Major League Lacrosse. So they know what they're doing, and like I said, I mean, I think we haven't done the order up in the AFC East, but I'm pretty sure both of us are going to have Patriots near the bottom. But guys, man, just, we're all sleeping on them. We're not hearing anything about them. And watch, they're just going to come out and be like, "What? How did we not talk about the Patriots being better?"
The issue with them is the quarterback. It's Mac Jones. Like, what's the maturation process look like? Because they have weapons. They're 3 deep at tight end. They brought in Juju. Say what you will about Juju, but you know what?
He wins.
You know, Bourne is still there. You have guys. Like, this is the time. If Mac Jones is going to be the guy that we thought he was going to be out of Alabama, he needs to take a major step forward. The offense is ready. The offense has the talent. Yeah. It's on
Devontae Parker, quarterback. Devontae Parker, yeah.
Your boy, Devontae Parker. You love that guy. It's time. It is time.
Yeah, I mean, I get, you know what it is? Like, they're just more defensive-oriented. Like, they've got, I didn't realize how good they were on defense last year. If you look through the statistics, they were like one of the best defenses last year, and actually have been the last 5 years.
Now, Creepy Steve is very good at coaching.
Yeah. And then, you know, offensively, you're getting the bargain guys. You're getting bargain talent. Like Juju Smith-Schuster, like you said, Devontae Parker. These are guys that, you know, they left the team that drafted them, and they're still trying to find out their niche in football, you know, and when was the last time, you know, Bill drafted a wide receiver or drafted any skilled position player like worth a damn? Like, he's been missing that.
I'm glad you added worth a damn, because I was about to throw N'Keal Harry out there.
Like, yeah.
Like, that guy. Well, Jakobi Meyers was good. Like, I think Jakobi Meyers was a solid.
And he's a Raider now.
And he's a Raider now. Like, wait a second here. So what you're telling me is that the New England Patriots are now the feeder team for the Las Vegas Raiders.
Possibly.
I mean, you have the quarterback, the coach, the one of the wide receivers. It's kind of sad when you think about it. It's like how the mighty have fallen.
Avoid messy accidents. Get better stopping power with your brake pads. Callahan brake pads. You never know when you'll be driving in the road and there will be a truck tire that you need to avoid and save your family. Callahan Auto. Really care about what's under your hood.
But speaking of how the mighty have fallen, we usually do not take much from preseason games, right? It's a Diet Coke.
I like preseason, you don't.
I'm not a fan. Like, you know, show
I'm
me,
not a fan.
I'm not a fan. The first two are meaningless, and then the last one, that's very high risk for little reward. Just ask Mark Sanchez.
Oh.
But there was one game over the weekend that everybody's talking about. It really gave him something to talk about. And that was the Raiders and the Niners. Trey Lance started for the Niners in a bit of a showcase game. He went 10 of 15 for 115 yards and a tutty. That's a fine stat line, right? That sounds good, especially for a preseason. But he was sacked 4 times. He didn't really seem sure of his throws, and he was almost picked off twice. So word on the street, the little scuttlebutt is the Niners love them some Sam Darnold, and Brock Purdy would have to melt on the field to lose his starting job. And even Brandon Allen, or Kyle Allen, is a...
Brandon. I think you're right.
It's Brandon. It was Brandon, right?
It's
Brandon Allen? It's one
I'm
of
pretty
those
sure
Allen.
It's Brandon Allen. I think you had it right.
It's the one who doesn't back up Joe Burrow. Or the one who did back up Joe Burrow. Yeah.
Yes, it's Brandon Allen. I've confirmed
Brandon Allen. I thought so.
He's friend of the program.
Love you, Brandon. Love your work back. You really know how to get that orange Gatorade. And just
thanks for that Broncos signed jersey, buddy.
Anyway, he's a proven backup. Leaving, where does that leave Trey Lance? On the bench. Ugats, that's where he is. Now, if the Niners end up cutting Trey Lance, will this be the biggest swing and a miss in NFL history?
Oh, you know, I'm thinking about this. I don't think so. I think Mitch Trubisky was a pretty bad one. I mean, the Bears gave up a lot to move up to draft him, and that was a guy that only played 1 year of college football. The Bears traded up to get him. Jets trading up to get Mark Sanchez. Ugh. Butt fumble. Jets trading up to get Sam Darnold. Oof. I mean, Lance is pretty bad. But the problem is, right, he missed his last year of college because of COVID. Like, they canceled the season. They just played one game to showcase him. He's 6'5", big, strong quarterback in D2, right? Then Jimmy G almost gets to the Super Bowl, right? Then right. Lance gets hurt. And now there are just veterans on the team that run the offense better than him, right? I mean, he hasn't really played football in like 3 years. So, you know, the problem with Lance is he needs to play. He needs time. And I think that's what we saw in that preseason game. Is like when the start of the game is awful. Like, he was tentative. He was staring down his receiver in zone coverage. He couldn't sit still in the pocket. He's getting sacked, and this is a big, strong guy, and he's getting knocked down, and there's no fighting him. But then as he eased into the game, as he got into a flow, things started to click, you know? And then he finishes 10 for 15. Like, it just – he needed time. But if you're Shanahan, I don't need a guy that needs time. I got 3 guys here that know this offense, that are playing it well. And, you know, for Lance, what he needs is like a John Gruden. He needs like a Sean McVay. He needs like a Sean Payton. That's what he needs right now. And that's just not going to happen here in San Francisco. I think the 49ers wanted Wilson in the draft. And we talked about this years ago. And the Jets took him, which, you know, turned out to be bad for Wilson and also bad for the 49ers. But I do not see this as the biggest swing and a miss. I do still think Shanahan and Lynch should be fired because they wasted the pick, and you could have had better players at that position, but you chose to trade draft picks and trade up to get a guy who didn't really play college football. And now you found out that the last guy you took in the draft is going to be the starter. He'd have to melt it for us to start somebody else. Well, that just tells me you don't know what the hell you're doing. So, yeah, that's where I sit.
Well, it's a gamble. Right? It was definitely a gamble making that trade.
Gambles don't pay off. Sometimes.
Not always.
It's price.
Absolutely. If you're looking at it, right? Think about some gambles that took place. Let's talk about Jamarcus Russell. That's a gamble. 31 games, 18 career touchdowns. Handed a blank DVD. Coach, those are some great plays. We should run them.
Yeah, but the only thing I would say about Jamarcus Russell is he had a really good college career, and he could throw the ball from his knees like 60 yards. Like, the talent was there. It's just the drive and the competitiveness wasn't, and they didn't find that out until he got there. You know, this kid played for South Dakota State, man.
Yeah, but still, like, that's the thing. Like, you've gotten guys from that. You have Carson Wentz. You literally have a guy.
Who's he looking for right now?
Well, he's looking for a job as well.
Yeah, so he's unemployed.
Trey Lance might be looking for a job too. But they'll find you if you're talented.
Oh, he's going to get a job. Oh, he's going to get a job.
Oh, 100%.
It's just not going to be for the 49ers.
Right.
He has talent. It just needs to be developed. Like, the same thing with Zach Wilson. I believe Zach Wilson has talent. He's just not an NFL quarterback yet. He needs someone to make him into an NFL quarterback. And I don't know. There's not a lot of Trevor Lawrences out there, man. Like, even Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers came out. He sat behind Brett for how many years? 3-4 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
But if they think about the stretches, right? Like, the quarterback taken before Aaron Rodgers with Brady Quinn. Oof. Right? That was bad. That was a stretch. We can do this just on the Browns. Tim Couch, number one. Manziel.
Brandon Weeden. I really thought he was the future.
What about the Carolina Panthers taking Chris Winkie? He was 30.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, come on now. Ryan Leaf at number
Ken
two.
Ken Dorsey. Eesh.
Like, there have been... Trey Lance will be one of many. He won't be the only one. That's the thing. Like, Browning Nagel. Like, these guys have played in the NFL.
Akili Smith.
You know, he was at Oregon. So, there have been plenty of guys. Like, think about the guys who were taken ahead of Tom Brady. Giovanni Carmazzi comes to mind.
Like, Mark Bulger was good, though.
You know, Chad Pennington had his moments.
He was good. When he was healthy, he was good.
Yeah. But to say that...
Chris Redman?
You know. Then you get a guy like Todd Marinovich. You were mentioning Trevor Lawrence, right? Like, basically bred to be a starting quarterback. Like, you know, Todd Marinovich was the test tube quarterback. Mm-hmm. Like, for every Trevor Lawrence, you're going to get a Todd Marinovich. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just destined for failure. But you boiled it down to the absolute God's honest truth. If Kyle Shanahan and Brian Griese can develop this guy, you might have something. You might still have something. He's young enough, right? He's inexperienced. He's only had 8 career games.
Right.
8! Can I interest you in more than 8 before we make a snap judgment? I mean, yes, Brock Purdy has wrestled that job away from him, but I'm not, you know, last time I checked, the Niners were ready to start Phillip Rivers in the Super Bowl if they got that far, because there's nobody left. So you're going to need a backup, especially in Kyle Shanahan's system.
Oh, yeah.
It's bound to happen.
Dude, yeah. He's actually contemplating. He's contemplating carrying 4 quarterbacks. Like, he really realizes, yeah, people get hurt here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bullpen. It's a bullpen situation. You're going to need to go to the bullpen in the San Francisco 49ers, you know, in the San Francisco 49ers system. There's a reason why Josh Johnson was on the roster and got playing time in the NFC title game. It's not either it's the line play or it's the offensive coordination or it's a combination of the two. But quarterbacks go to die in San Francisco. So it remains to be seen. It's too early to say that it's a bust. It's too early to say that it was a rash decision. He's only played 8 games. Brock Purdy's only played 9 games. You got to let these guys develop. Now, you're higher on Sam Darnold than I am. Like, that's obvious. Like, that's you. You're You are a Sam Darnold fan. Absolutely. He has 20. He at least has 56 career games under his belt.
Right.
So, you know, we kind of like, this is who he is.
Right. Yes, I agree.
There's tape on Sam. Like, we can kind of figure that out. But did any of us see Geno Smith coming?
No.
None of us saw Geno Smith coming last year. So, with the right coaching, is it possible that Sam Darnold can be Geno Smith? Yes, absolutely. Yes, and not just because they're ex-Jets. And, you know, it's possible. It's absolutely possible.
Although the ex-Jets do play very well when they lead.
And usually against the Jets.
Chad Pennington went to the Miami Dolphins and immediately won the division.
That's all you need to know about. That's all you need to know about ex-Jet quarterback.
Fantastic.
Boomer Esiason went to Arizona and he actually revitalized his career for a little while at least. But you know,
if you start looking at defensive players that left the Jets, you'll be surprised at how well they did too.
Everybody except Jamal Adams. Fuck that guy.
What's his name? John Vilma.
Jonathan Vilma. Oh my God.
Super Bowl champion.
Stud. But that's the thing. Like, you really need to let this breathe a little bit. You know, it might very well end up being an embarrassment, but it also might end up being okay. Like, I remember watching From Elway to Marino, right? Elway to Marino is a great documentary from ESPN. And they mention that, yes, Elway's gone, but you brought in Chris Hinton. And Chris Hinton had a really good career. Is he John Elway? No. But he certainly filled a key role on your roster. So let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's have some pause before we decide that this is the worst thing in history, because another worst thing in history is going to come around the corner. That's the beauty part about history. It doesn't end. There's no bottom there. It's an abyss. You think you hit bottom? Nope. There's 50 feet more of crap. Do you love brownies? Of course you love brownies. But you know what's better than a brownie? A delicious, handcrafted, gourmet brownie delivered right to your doorstep. That's what our guys at Sweet Life Brownie Co. offer. Chef Tommy D and the crew offer a dozen delicious delights that you will crave, from the classic OB to Dutch Apple to Campfire S'mores and many more. Check out their website, sweetlifebrownieco.com, for their Friday brownie drops. At noon, their site goes live and you see what they're making. Since you're there, become a site member and earn points. You earn 50 points just by signing up. Make sure you follow them on Instagram and Facebook too, at sweetlifebrownie_co, for the latest updates and their latest releases and creations. That's sweetlifebrownieco.com. Give them a call, 845-641-3043, and tell them D&Z sent you. That's sweetlifebrownieco.com, 845-641-3043. Sweet Life Brownie Co., because there's always room for a brownie. Speaking of crap, in some sad news, former NFL offensive lineman Michael Orr, the former left tackle of the Baltimore Ravens, most notably, is suing his family. Michael Orr's life story was turned into the Oscar-nominated movie The Blind Side. But now Michael Orr is claiming the story is not true. Orr claims that his family, the Tuohys, filed conservatorship paperwork and not adoption paperwork. Kind of like a little Britney Spears situation.
Britney Spears action, yeah.
Yeah. So, allegedly, his family profited off of Michael's story and did not share any of the profits with him. They continue to profit off of Michael by doing motivational speaking based off of Michael's success story and the success of the movie The Blind Side. Do you stand with Michael or his alleged adoptive family?
Oh, man, this is ugly. It's ugly. It's
bad.
So ugly. Ugly, ugly. It's It's bad. You know what? At this moment, I'm going to side with the Tui family. I think there was some exploiting going on, but I think they do care for Michael, and I think he benefited from living with them as well. I think both sides benefited from them being in a relationship with one another. But the whole situation is ugly, and I wish there was some way to resolve this without it going the lawsuit route. I mean, Sandra Bullock won an Oscar for this movie, for crying out loud. I mean, imagine if it was all based on a lie. Yikes. But I mean, listen, I mean, even the movie talks about how, you know, people thought that they were simply doing it just for the money, or just to get him drafted, or just to get him to Ole Miss and all that other stuff. I like to believe in the wholesomeness of people. I like to believe that it's not true, that they do care about him. And I think he might be being taken advantage of by his attorney or whatever legal counsel that he's been provided right now. Michael made a lot of money playing football. The Tuies were already a million-dollar family. They already had money. They got more money. I just think it's ugly, and I hope that they're able to come to grounds, and I hope they're able to, you know, save whatever could be saved from this relationship.
At the end of the day, it is very unseemly on both sides, if you are to believe what you're told. Now, according to ESPN, doing a little digging, they found an online Memphian article from Sean Tui, Michael's allegedly adopted father, saying that the reason why they chose to go this route rather than adoption was if they did conservatorship instead, it would be a violation of the rules, because Tui, because of his financial status, could have been considered a booster. So it's a weird situation where the NCAA rules were once again rearing their ugly head, and it screwed up the situation.
Oh, okay.
So by seeking conservatorship rather than adoption, it was somehow skirting the rules of classification as a booster. So, like, I don't know about that. But that's for a lawyer to decide the validity of it. But if that's the Tui story, then, you know, that's what we're going to go with. But they were already very well, they're very well off. Michael Orr, I believe, made $16 million in the league, maybe a little bit more. So he definitely benefited from this partnership, whether it was adoption, family, whatever that may be. And the inspirational story of it all, if it is just in fact a story, is still a feel-good story. It just reminds you that happily ever after, it only exists in fairy tales. Mm-hmm. So that's something that needs to be remembered. Not everything's a Hallmark movie where it's, you know, happily ever after and then the credits run. Right? There's some life exists after that. So both sides, I don't like airing out the dirty laundry in public, especially if you are family. You keep that behind closed doors.
Yeah.
You know, if it's going to be legal, if it's going to get ugly, lock yourselves in a room, lock your representation in a room, and go for it there. It is very unseemly. And at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. It may matter from the standpoint of, you know, did the Tuies take advantage of a situation? I don't necessarily think they did. It sounds like it was mutually beneficial. Like, he got to go to Ole Miss. He got to play football. He got to, you know,
got drafted.
He got drafted. He made a life for himself in the NFL.
He lived with them. They fed him. He's part of their family. I mean, he did family things together.
So that's what we saw. Now, the reality of it, we don't know. And we're hearing his side. We're hearing the Tui side. And then between them is the truth. but all we can go by is what is factual. And from the outside looking in, it looks like a mutually beneficial situation. Now, later, you know, as things come to light and as, you know, things become clearer, like, how long did it take the Britney Spears thing to work itself out? Years.
Yeah.
Years.
That chick was off her rocker, too.
I mean, she was definitely, that was definitely stress-induced. Like, a lot of that was stress-induced. So, you definitely, there's going to be problems that are resulting from this. In this case, familial strain, number one. And number two, like, definitely some mental health situation as well. But it just, it's an unseemly look, and like, all it did was like tarnish the story. Like, we want to think that that was, we want to think that there's some good in the world. Like you mentioned, right? You did this,
yeah.
You know, the family did this out of, you know, their heart and out of, you know, an idea of charity and out of love for this child and love for this person and some level of altruism. But, you know, we see it too many times where people see dollar signs and it makes them do crazy shit. Like, money is the root of everything. Like, remember I said last week, follow the money? Follow the money here. Money makes people do really sad, really desperate, and oftentimes stupid things. I would advise, and who am I, right? I host a podcast weekly. Get into a room. Turn off the outside world. You get in the room with your representation and you iron this out. If there was any love there, if there was true altruism there, like that's the place for this. Not a courtroom, not public opinion. Just hash it out. Lock yourselves in a room and make it happen.
Is your hair thinning or is your hairline receding? Scalp micropigmentation will fill in the areas where your hair is missing by creating a short buzz cut look. Micropigmentation is a non-invasive procedure that will create the illusion of hair follicles for 7 to 10 years. For people with alopecia, this could be a permanent fix. For people with scars on their scalp, this is a great way to camouflage a scar. Don't lose confidence or feel like you need to wear a hat wherever you go. Marquez Studio is located in the Bronx and is open for all your scalp micropigmentation needs. Consultations are free and appointments can be made any day of the week. Get your hairline back with scalp micropigmentation. The techs at Marquez Studio have over 30 years of hair cutting experience and can assist you with all of your questions. Call to schedule a consultation today, 646-221-8728. You can also visit them on Instagram at Bronx Marquez to see their gallery and view all their satisfied customers. Again, that is Marquez Studio, located in the Bronx, New York, 646-221-8728.
Two other people that need to lock themselves into a room and make it happen are James Harden and Daryl Morey. It's a minor NBA story, but, you know, it's a continuation of a story that we've been talking about seemingly for a year. You know, the regular season starts in a little over 60 days, and James Harden was in China. Okay. But James Harden, while in China, decided to tell people how he felt about Daryl Morey and the 76ers. He just felt the need to unburden himself in that moment. Quote, "Daryl Morey is a liar and I will never be part of an organization he is part of," end quote. Directly from the mouth of James Harden. This comes on the heels of the 76ers breaking off trade talks with the Clippers, a team James Harden would like to be traded to. How should Daryl Morey proceed?
Well, these are harsh words for your employer, right?
Yeah.
Could you imagine? You're a teacher. You're standing up in the auditorium being like, you know, principal, whatever, I was a liar. I'm never going to work for this organization ever again. Mic drop.
Boom.
I'm not
Who's
sure.
Who's coming with me?
Listen, I'm not sure. Who's coming with me? I'm not sure how Maury plans to respond, but I hope he takes a stand for all the owners out there and all the GMs out there and hold James accountable for his contract. You know, after being one of the highest paid players in Houston, he forced his way out to Brooklyn. Then in Brooklyn, after being unsuccessful with the Nets, he forced his way to Philly, where they've paid him handsomely. Yeah. And he's teamed with one of the best players in the NBA. And now he wants to be traded to the Clippers? No place he's gone has he ever won. I mean, just don't give in to what he wants. If you can stomach it, I mean, at some point, someone's got to take a stand. You know, when he left Houston, I was like, I kind of get it. Like, you're not winning. They didn't build a good roster. This doesn't make sense. You should go to Brooklyn. Okay, yeah. Kyrie's there, Durant's there, sure. And then in Brooklyn, it's just like he's trying to force his way to the 76ers. And I'm like, all right, you know what? Kyrie's not playing. Durant's hurt. You're doing it all yourself. Management's being weird. All right, James. Okay, yeah, I can get behind you wanting to go to Philly. All right, cool. You get to Philly. You play like trash in the season, in the playoffs. Your team's with one of the best players in the NBA. They fire the coach because you don't like the coach. And it's like, now you want to be traded to the Clippers? Like, well, hold on a minute, man. Like, hold on a second. Like, let's work this out. And then you go and you say this in front of people? Like, you trash me? The guy who got you here? The guy who's paying you? The guy who has his finger on the pulse of where you go and what you do? I don't know, man. I don't know. I just, if he can stomach it, I sit him. I think he loses something like $385,000 a game. Let it happen.
DNP, coach's decision, until he comes to his set. You don't suspend him, right? You don't deactivate him. You don't do any of that. DNP, coach's decision. That's it and that's all. That way he accrues time. And then he can go. Or you can get somebody will step up and trade for him. Because at the end of the day, Daryl Morey needs to do what's best for the Philadelphia 76ers. He does not owe James Harden shit. You owe him ugas, is what you owe James Harden. And this is not the first time that Daryl Morey has dealt with him, because who was the GM in Houston? Daryl Morey. So he's got this 1 year left. He exercised his option. It's $35.6 million. He's gone. Let him go. Let him go, or have somebody desperate enough to trade for him. You don't need to capitulate to James Harden. You don't need to only trade him to the Clippers. Where's your leverage? Like, how do you extract the best possible deal when it's like Damian Lillard. How are you supposed to extract the best possible deal when he can only be traded to this one team because it's the only team that he's willing to play for? Like, that's ridiculous.
Does it work like that?
No. If you used me as an example before. Like, if I'm teaching at my current school and I see there's an opening at Cardinal Spellman, our alma mater, and I really want to work there, I'm not going to go to my principal and say, you're a liar. I want to go teach at Cardinal Spellman, and I'm not going to teach here unless you let me out of my contract so I can go over there, or send me over there in some kind of weird compensation. Life does not work that way. Only in sports does it work that way. And, well, only in basketball.
Right, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, only in basketball does it really work that way. The one time that it worked with John Elway. I'm not going to play for Baltimore. Okay. You know, Eli Manning. Like, I want to play for the Giants. I don't want to play in San Diego. Like, very rarely does it work in sports outside of basketball. But basketball, it seems to work constantly. Now, if you're looking at the Sixers roster, they still have Joel Embiid. They have Tobias Harris. They have Tyrese Maxey. You have three guys there. Like, you have a semi-big three, right? You have a large three. Maybe not an extra large three, but you got three competent guys, right? And one who happens to be the reigning MVP. Just throwing that out. Then you have, like, Pat Bev, Montrezl Harrell. You have D'Anthony Melton. Guys that can kind of shoulder the load, right? P.J. Tucker's there. You have players. You have a squad here. Now, how good is it going to be? Like, it would be better if you had James Harden. But this is a 76ers team that could probably, at the very least, make the play-in tournament. Would you agree with that statement? That they could at least, as currently constructed without James Harden, make the play-in tournament?
Yes.
Easily. Yeah. So, Charlie Finley used to say, when he was going into arbitration, we finished in last place with you, we can finish in last place without you. It's a similar situation here. Like, we can do this with or without you. We'll be in playoff contention with or without you. Ideally with you, because we'll be better. James Harden, with his head on straight, would get this team probably up into fourth place. Maybe even third. If he's really trying. But he's hell-bent on going to the Clippers. Why? You got me. But Daryl Morey should just keep him there until he shows up, right? Until he realizes that it's hitting him in the wallet, it's hitting him in the ego. And it would be ideal if the Sixers are doing well, because that'll be the ultimate blow to the ego. I'm like, shit, they really don't need me. I really am that luxury. I am that parsley on the plate. I'm the garnish. Joel Embiid's actually the steak. But you're right. Daryl Morey needs to grow a set and tell this guy no. Because in recent years, James Harden hasn't been told no a lot by organizations. Coach, players, he's had this run. Stand up to him, stand your ground, and then when the time is right, if he still wants to go and there's an offer on the table that benefits you and your team, you do it, because that is who you are responsible for. You're not the general manager of James Harden. That's his agent. You are responsible for the health and well-being of the Philadelphia 76ers. Don't you forget that. Step outside of your safe area and make a statement without saying much with FCK Clout Lifestyle Apparel. Embrace the colorful chaos and stay emotionally regulated in their hoodies, snapbacks, graphic tees, accessories, and more. Season 3 merch is up now. Get it while you can. Go to fckclout.com and get all of your needs for men and women. That's fckclout.com. Speaking of health and well-being, Met fans are not doing too well right now. Met fans are not doing well at all. The team is doing very poorly, and they've been absolutely awful since the trade deadline. They won 2 in a row, and it makes you, it lights you up inside. and then they promptly lose to the Pirates. But the Mets have made headlines off the field as much as they've made them on the field. There's an intriguing story coming out about one of their star players. Sal Licata of WFAN alleges that Pete Alonso, the polar bear, is creating a toxic clubhouse for the New York Mets. And that the Mets would be better off trading Pete Alonso. This report is refuted by Steve Gelbs of SNY, who's actually there every day. You know, he's in the clubhouse every day. So Gelbs says no. Sal says yes. Is this a desperate attempt by Sal Licata to make his new show with Brandon Tierney more popular? Or could there be some truth to this matter?
I'm going to go with it, a desperate attempt to make his show more popular. The Pete I see seems like a good guy. He seems like a good egg, but maybe a little bit of a Freddie Freeman type. But I can't see him making the clubhouse toxic. I'm sure he's frustrated at, you know, how bad they are and how they're playing and everybody around him. But I don't buy into that he's making the locker room toxic. I do think the Mets should explore trading him next year, just because I don't think they're going to be able to pay him. I don't think it's worth paying him when his max deal is available, because they're not ready. They're just not ready. They put a lot of eggs in the Lindor basket. So that I can get on board with, but I don't think he's as bad as they're making him out to be.
I don't really see him as that kind of person. I'm with you on that. He strikes me as a frat boy type, right? He strikes me as a guy who's kind of aloof, fun-loving kind of guy, but between the lines, he's serious and he wants to win. That sounds like a guy I want on my team. Never mind his production. Like, this year, he had a really bad bone bruise, and he came back too early because he was trying to help the team. Like, everybody can see that, right? That bone bruise should have kept him out for 8 weeks. He was back in two. He was on the 10-day IL, did not get extended. He was back in 10 days. So, like, you kind of deal with that. I say that you extend him. He's not an issue. The Mets are a year too late on trading Jeff McNeil, in my opinion. Like, McNeil is a very good hitter, reigning batting champion.
He's a good hitter.
He's a pretty decent fielder. He's versatile. I'd say we can argue that, right? He's played second. He's played third. He's played corner outfield. He played center field, for God's sakes. The guy's all over the place. He has not lived up to his end of the bargain this year. His batting average has dropped 50 points. His power numbers are practically non-existent. And he seems to be developing negative chemistry with Francisco Lindor. That's kind of important. Your double play combination needs to at least be on the same page. And since day one, they've kind of not gelled the way that you would like to. Now, McNeil is feisty. He's temperamental, pissy, if you will. Kind of a crybaby sometimes. It's coming from a Met fan. Like, Jeff McNeil is very much like a Paul O'Neill type or a Brett Gardner type. Every pitch he takes is a ball because he says so. He can never be called for a strike. It just strikes me as very frustrating. And then you can tell he's frustrated too. He's the kind of guy that I would think would rub people the wrong way in the clubhouse, because of that kind of chippiness, that fieriness. Like, that could rub some people the wrong way, because it's intensity, right? But that can easily be mistaken for something else. Now, we know that Scherzer rubbed people the wrong way. He still rubs people the wrong way. It's what Max Scherzer does. He's now rubbing people the wrong way outside of New York. particularly umpires. In another report, Justin Verlander was said to be aloof, standoffish, and a diva, and that the clubhouse chemistry was not the same as last year when Bassett was there, when Taijuan Walker was there, and those three guys, Scherzer, Bassett, and Walker, made up the chemistry, the core chemistry of the starting rotation that carried the team last year. So where there's smoke, like this is multiple instances of smoke, there may be fire, but I don't necessarily think that Pete Alonso is that guy. Sal Licata is kind of all over the place with his arguments that one day Alonso is the face of your franchise, you got to keep him. The next day you're going to trade him. That sounds a little sensationalistic to me. That sounds like a guy who was on the overnight, right? And Sal was, I believe he was working 12 to 4. Notoriously thin-skinned, blocks anybody on X that disagrees with him, openly argues with callers, but not in a constructive way, calling them losers. Dude, that loser, that air quote loser, just called into your show. He is your audience, and you're calling him a loser. What the hell is wrong with you? What are you doing? And now you have this new venture with Brandon Tierney, who's a snooze fest. I can't listen to him. You put these two guys together and it sounds like a recipe for disaster. And WFAN in general has gone down the tubes in recent years. Now you have Evan Roberts and Tiki Barber in the afternoon to replace Craig Carton and Evan Roberts, who replaced Moose and Maggie. It's just not good. It's just they haven't found the magic that they had with Mike and the Mad Dog. They're still chasing Mike and the Mad Dog. Mike and the Mad Dog have not been together in forever. Now they're going to more sensationalistic, more shocky jock type stuff, who are just saying things to get a rise out of fans, saying things to get attention. And it's just, it's not a good look. You know, Beningo's gone, Steve Summers is gone, Mike's gone, Russo's been gone. Boomer, he's barely hanging on. That morning show sucks. Love you, Boom. Hate your co-host. That show sucks. So, it's the desperate attempt to hang on, to relevancy. WFAN is just absolutely god-awful. And Sal Licata is part of the symptom one. You're just trying to get reactions. Reactions, reactions, reactions. Get to the substance. People will listen to good journalism. People will listen to good radio. If you're going to insult their intelligence or just come out with blatant stupidity, you're going to lose listeners. That's how this works. Do some research. You claim you have. I'm a math teacher. Show your work, son. Put it out there. Show your work. And let the audience decide for itself. This trust me stuff, trust me, I know what I'm saying. It doesn't work. Put the cards on the table, Sal. Put the cards on the table.
Are you in need of air care maintenance or service? I have the company for you. Air Care Technicians. They service the Westchester and Northern Bronx area and can help you with all your heating and cooling maintenance and service needs. Just give them a call at 914-315-1547. Again, that's 914-315-1547. Or shoot them an email at aircaretechnicians@gmail.com. These guys are the real deal, as they are veteran-owned, licensed, and insured. make sure to tell them that D&Z sent you.
It's the In Route, where friends of the show get a special segment with us. Want to be part of the action? Want to be the newest member of the In Crowd? You know what to do. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in those DMs on Fade Route Podcast on IG, or hit that Twitter, FadeRouteDNZ.
Joining us on the In Route today, we have the Tubby Hooks, Danny Butler. Thanks for joining us today, Danny.
Thank you so much, guys. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate
What's
it.
What's up, Danny?
Well, listen, you requested this time to vent on the Yankees' last pace campaign. The floor is yours, my friend.
Well, it's not the floor. We're below the floor. We're in the basement, which hasn't happened since, like, the Stump Merrill years when we were kids. We're 500 this late in the season for the first time since 1995. He got hot, won like 18 out of the last 21, and wanted to make it in the playoffs, but that was a different team. This ain't happening. I mean, I can't remember a more disappointing year. They're lifeless. They're lethargic. They're hard to watch. They're anemic, especially without Judge. The offense is anemic. The pitching is a disaster. I mean, you guys, like Severino, they keep on trotting him out there. Oh, he's a starter. We'll have an opener. It's like they don't care. It's like, we know Hal doesn't care. He's making his money. Cashman just wants to stick to his guns to prove he's right. Right about what? I don't know what. And Boone is like a Pollyanna. Everything's okay.
We're fighting, right? That's what he loves to say at the press conference.
Savvy had some stuff last night.
Yeah. He threw a couple strikes. Some of them didn't end up, in the outfield bleachers. He too. That's a good thing, right? It's like someone told him the other day that I think we lead the league in double plays. And he says, "Well, you have to get on bases to get to double plays." It's like. I've never been a Boone fan, but at this point, I don't even blame him anymore because, like, what's he going to do? I mean, he makes some bad moves in the bullpen, but, when he rests guys after they're hot for a couple of days, that's not coming from him. That's coming from Cashman and all the analytic nerds up in the front office. Like, it's just, and Boone shows some fight in terms of the umpires. The umpires hate him. They call him Karen Boone because he doesn't stop arguing. and like, the other day with Lance Diaz and a couple before when he got ejected, the umpires are bad. The calls he got thrown out on were the right calls, actually. It was one of the few the umpires got right, and he just makes an ass out of himself.
I just was stunned that Hal came out and said that, Cashman is safe, but he's unsure about Boone. I don't know how Cashman could be safe after they're going to finish in last place. At least that's what it looks like right now.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe it either. And even if you're Hal and you know that, you don't want to make a move, why come out and say it?
Yeah,
maybe it lights a fire into Cashman to try to change things up. Cashman went when he first couple of the Yankees and we were winning championships and everything, but when George was still alive and very much in the picture, George had two camps. He had it was Cashman and his guys, and then George had his Tampa cronies that he listened to and probably too much sometimes. So Cashman didn't have the power he probably should have. But now since George is gone, he has power unchecked. He's like Napoleon. Like no one, he just does whatever he wants, and nobody. Makes the same mistakes over and over again, and nobody calls him on it because Hal says he's safe. So there's no reason for him to change things. Like, you look, we went into this year. All right, Jose Trevino had a good season last year. It was a career year. But the last 2 months of the year, he was back to being a backup catcher. Higashioka is a nice player. He's a backup catcher. We didn't have a left fielder. So you went into, and pretty much like you knew DJ was done. Rizzo, the way they handled Rizzo this year, we all knew he hurt his neck or a concussion with the San Diego thing when Tatis didn't slide into, on the pickoff attempt. It took them 3 months of him being terrible to say, oh, you know what? There's something wrong with him. But even Rizzo, 2 years ago when we had a chance, you could have got Freddie Freeman. You could have got Matt Olson, who I really wanted. He's got 42 home runs. He'd have 62 playing Yankee Stadium.
Yes.
Yeah, at the time, I wasn't upset that we re-signed Rizzo. I thought he was a solid third option. But, it's becoming too much like that for the Yankees, settling for third options. That's never happened before. I know the luxury tax, but they still make the most money in baseball. And Hal doesn't care because Hal's got 42,000 people in the crowd every night. But Hal's going to get a rude awakening, because the last three times we didn't make the playoffs, there was always something happening in terms of that was drawing people to the ballpark. In 08, we had the last year at Yankee Stadium, place was packed every night. And then the last two times we didn't make the playoffs, it was Mariano's last year and Jeter's last year. That's not happening this year. And if we're still six games back of a wild card, you know, in mid-September, the place is going to be a ghost town. Maybe that'll be the slap in the face to wake Hal up.
Yeah, well, keep in mind that the same money they gave to Rendon, I mean, what's the pitcher?
Rodon.
That's the same amount of money the Dodgers gave to Freddie Freeman. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying. Well, other than Gerrit Cole and Aaron Judge, defend one Yankees performance and name one pleasant surprise this season.
I mean, they're tough to defend. I think Volpe gets a little too much criticism. Yeah, he's only batting .211, but he's a rookie. And I was happy that he made the team right off the bat. I thought that was a sign of things changing around here. But I think they ruined him a little bit. There's no shame in sending the guy to the minors for 2 or 3 weeks to fix his swing. Especially when his old minor league teammate fixed it helped fix it with the, you know, what was it, Austin Wells, right? He ran into Austin Wells during the whole thing, and he, you know, he went said, you know, go back to doing this.
He had Austin Wells over for dinner, a nice little chicken parm dinner.
Oh, the chicken parm, that's right, yeah. Yeah, so like...
Chicken parm cures everything.
Yeah, it really does. Jeter loved chicken parm. I wish Volpe, you know, played more like Jeter, but, like, I think Volpe could be a player.
I think he's a second baseman.
He's been okay short. He doesn't have the greatest arm in the world. Yeah, he might be second baseman down the road.
It's the range for me.
Yeah.
And his instincts. He just doesn't charge the ball and attack it like you need to at shortstop. His timing seems more fit for second base. Just me saying.
It does. And listen, Glaber's one of the few guys that's hit well this year, although he's the stupidest base runner I've ever seen. And like, can we just sit him once to say, like, hey, bud, like, you can't. Did you see the play the other day? It was a ground. He's on second with one out. There's a ground ball to third base. It hit the third base there, but the third base was there, and he tagged him out. I was like, how do you run when the ball is at third base? I don't think he understands. I think he thinks everything's a force. I honestly think he doesn't understand. You don't have to run sometimes. But
quite possible.
But why should he? Because he makes a mistake. Aaron Boone says it's okay. He's playing hard, which he doesn't play hard. But another guy who's been solid, you know, except for his last performance, I think Clark Schmidt. I think they didn't know if he was a starter or a reliever. He got off to a shaky start, but he's been very solid. I think you can peg him in, you know, as a number four going on the rest of his career, with, you know, if you get some help around him. But there's really no bright spots. I'm kind of just, you know, reaching out of thin air here.
I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, you can definitely grasp at straws with this team. Like, I mean, the fact that you could even consider a guy like IKF. Like that tells you how far like the rest of the Yankees have kind of fallen. Like the versatility of IKF, where you know, think about utility players in the past, right? Luis Soho, Clay Bellinger,
right.
Like they all fit a role, but IKF is being lionized for being a utility infielder and utility outfielder. Like he's filling a role, but he's like a mythical folk hero at this point, to the point where Yankee fans are considering, you know, like, do we want to give him an extension at the end of the year as a reward? Like, what? What is going on here?
That's how ridiculous it's getting. And listen, IKF, he has done a great job, and he's played wherever they asked him to. He gets some big hits. Yeah, like you said, he's a utility guy. Like, that's what he is. And he on a good team, he could be a very valuable weapon, you know, especially if you ever make the playoffs. He's got speed. He can play everywhere. But he's played center field a lot this year. He's not a center fielder. Like, we went into the season with you knew Hicks was terrible or hurt. You figured, you know, you don't want Stanton playing the outfield. And even though Judge's injury was kind of a freak injury, you expect Judge to spend at least one stint on the DL. They went in with, and Bader, I like Bader, but he's always hurt too. They went in with no options. During the course of 162 games, guys like the Jake Bowers and the Billy McKinney's, they have to step up and they have to play okay. But that's in a small window. You're relying on it. We've been relying on these guys for months. That's not a big league baseball team. Never mind with the highest payroll in the league.
Franchi Cordero cracked the opening day roster. That's all you need to know.
Yeah,
about
exactly.
That.
Yeah,
outfield's a problem.
It's a huge problem. If you take Aaron Judge and Gerrit Cole off this team, I mean, we're already last place. I don't know how much worse it can get, but we're like, yeah, we're like the Royals. Like we'd be awful.
Harrison Bader is playing center field for the New York Yankees. That's all I have to say.
I mean, he'll be back.
He'll be back. He's a solid hitter, and he's a very good fielder. If you have Aaron Judge in right field and another big-time guy in left field, yeah, you can live with Bader in center field. But he's got Billy McKinney and Franchy Cordero, and it's absurd.
The immortal Willie Calhoun. I forgot about him.
Willie Calhoun. The immortal Willie Calhoun, yeah.
So
Willie's my Uber driver to work today, I think. He's a pretty good driver. I give him credit.
You gave him 5 stars?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So, a hypothetical situation. You're hired to replace Cashman as GM, and Hal says you can only make 3 moves. What are your priorities? How you fixing this team with 3 moves?
I think, one, you have to – I know analytics is everywhere. I think you either have to get a better analytics department or kind of maybe move away from it a little bit, because I just like, – like, the analytics is telling you that lefties – aren't a big deal. Yeah, but you're at Yankee Stadium. You know what I mean? You need big time lefties. It's I mean, if one of the moves would ask Hal to sell the team, but we know that's not gonna happen. you have to make a decision. Are you gonna be the Yankees? Are you gonna try to spend? Are you gonna, whether you get them or not, are you gonna throw all the money in the world at Ohtani or Juan Soto? Or if you're not and you want to go a different direction, then develop your guys better. Play the kids. You know, if you're gonna wait for a Dominguez, you know. Right, like, and now I got like a, it's just very frustrating, guys. As you can tell in my voice,
it's completely foreign territory for contemporary Yankee fans. You know, like, you have to really consider like that the Stick Michael Bob Watson model really spoiled the mid to late 90 Yankee fans.
We're absolutely spoiled,
and. That's the other thing. That's why it's mind-boggling to me that Cashman gets a break. He didn't build those teams. He got Bob Watson coffee. Like, people seem to forget that.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised that, you know, you didn't mention possibly moving Stanton. Like,
I wanted to move Stanton for years. And I mean, he's got a no trade. He's a guy. He turned down the trade. He turned down the Cardinals a couple years ago when he was with Miami. Like, who doesn't want to play in St. Louis? It's renowned as the best baseball town in the world. Now with only a couple years left in his contract, maybe you can move him. Because that's, you know, when people at the trade deadline, when they were, you know, jokingly saying, oh, you can get Ohtani. Well, you can't have Ohtani and Stanton on the same team because they don't play the outfield.
Right.
Like, Ohtani's capable of it, but you don't want him getting hurt if he's pitching, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I would love to try to find somebody to take Stanton's money. When we got him a couple years ago, people were excited. I wasn't. I said, okay, yeah, he's a good player, but we have Aaron Judge. I wanted to wait a year and sign Bryce Harper. I mean, I know Bryce has been hurt last year, but he'd be a much better fit on this team. I mean, Stan has.
They didn't even call him. They didn't even call him, Danny. They didn't even call Bryce Harper.
I know.
And he wanted them to call him.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
He wanted to talk. He knew it might not be possible, but he wanted the phone call.
Yeah.
And didn't even call the guy. Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
George is. We all know that.
And I don't know what they're waiting for to bring this kid up. Was it Pariah or
Pereira? Pariah, yeah.
What are you waiting for?
Right.
Fuck are you waiting for?
That's the only. You want to get people in the stadium in September? That's one way to do it, you know?
Peraza, Pereira.
How about Florial? You want to make the playoffs or not? What are you waiting for?
Yeah. Here's a guy, Florial. They told us about. Well, we signed him when he was 16. You heard about him for 5 or 6 years. He would come up in spurts. He never really hit, but I don't think they ever really gave him a big chance. But now he's in the minors tearing it up. And they're so worried about ruining his trade value by calling him up. You need to do a better job of evaluating your own talent and knowing when to move them.
Oh, look, you mean like how they ruined Clint Frazier's career?
Miguel Andujar?
Miguel Andujar had 50 doubles his rookie year. You know, a couple of years ago when, you know, the Astros got Cole and when they got Verlander, you don't want to give these guys up. And then you ruined them. Devy Garcia, we heard about Devy Garcia for years. He came up, he started a playoff game. He gave up, he struck out the side, gave up a solo shot, and then they took him out for Jay Happ, which was the stupidest move ever to try to fool them. They're going to have all the lefties in the lineup. And they never told Devy Garcia what they're doing. So this kid went thinking like, oh man, I gave up a home run, they took me out, like I'm bad. I think it ruined his psyche. They released him.
Now he's on the White Sox. Yeah, he's bad.
Yeah. Everson has a 926 OPS. Can I interest you in that for August?
Yeah. It's mind-boggling.
Dude, call them all up. Call Wells up. Call all the pitchers up. Like, everybody.
We did this in 2016. You know, we called up Judge. We called up these guys. Sanchez, and they showed something, and then we were back to being a contender within a year. And then we fired Joe Girardi because he was too tough on Gary Sanchez. Yeah, well, Gary Sanchez needed a kick in the ass. I think we all knew that. Then they bring in Boone, who's singing Kumbaya in the clubhouse, and that hasn't worked well.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's getting very close to being football season for both New York teams. So, you know, that's the one thing that we can all look forward to.
Yep.
But we're roughly 4 weeks away from the start of the NFL season. So let's talk some big blue. The Giants go into the season with a playoff appearance under their belt from last year. And with that comes increased expectations. They draw the Cowboys in week one, seemingly as per usual. Walk us through the Giants week one matchup against the Cowboys and give us those keys to victory.
Well, we need to show up week one. You hate to put too much bearing on one game, but our schedule is very tough, especially the first nine games. You want to show you're improved and you're a legit playoff contender, which I think we are. You have to go out and beat the Cowboys. The Cowboys are one of those fluky teams. There's going to be 3 to 4 games a year where they look like the best team in the league and Dak's looking great, putting up points. There's going to be 3 to 4 where Dak looks like he shouldn't be in the league. And then they're going to be average the rest of the time. You just hope week one is one of those weeks for Dak where he's throwing to the guys, you know, on defense, which he does a lot. I think this year, I'm very excited about the offense. Daniel Jones finally has a little continuity in the same system 2 years in a row. I think he really was taking giant steps last year towards the end of the year, the Colt game, the Viking game. We got our asses kicked by Philly, I understand. But he's got some more weapons. The key is going to be, as it always is, the offensive line. A guy like Micah Parsons can wreck the game. And if he gets to Daniel Jones early, you know, it could look like Daniel Jones from a couple of years ago. So we need to protect him. I think we can. With Andrew Thomas is an all-pro level. I think Evan Neal will take a meaningful step in his second year. Yeah, John Michael Schmitz, the rookie, everybody's raving about him. If he can step in as a rookie and play well, I think we have a very good offensive line. And on the end of the ball, you got to get to Dak. You got to pressure him. And I think with our pass rush, we're certainly capable of doing that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely within the realm of possibility. And then X McKinney and Dory Jackson just have to be waiting on those picks because they're coming.
Yep,
and that's the beauty part about Dak Prescott. You know, that train's never late.
No.
But, you know, so who in your mind, who will be the most valuable Giant this season, not named Daniel Jones or Saquon Barkley? So who is that breakout star for you?
Well, obviously the Waller pickup is huge because when he is healthy, I mean, he's uncoverable. You know, he's a freak. And that's what all the Giants are saying so far in camp. So he's a very important part. I think, you know, akin to that, I think the breakout star might be Daniel Bellinger, who I loved last year. And I thought he was on his way to having an excellent rookie year until he got poked in the eye. I think with Waller, even though Waller's probably going to line up, you know, in the slot or outside sometimes, I think in two tight end sets, I think Daniel Bellinger could be huge. Bobby Okereke, the guy we took up from the Colts, he's the best linebacker we have. I think our defense was good last year. Our linebackers were borderline disgraceful. I mean, just had nobody. So Jared Davis and, you know, Jalen Smith. I mean, yeah, these guys at one point might have been good, but not good anymore. The Colts, when we killed the Colts last year, and he was the only guy in the field making plays for them. And I remember thinking, like, oh, man, he gets overshadowed a little bit with Darius Leonard, right? Is that the guy from the Colts? Yeah. I think he gets overshadowed by Leonard a little bit. And you mentioned before, McKinney. I think McKinney's second year in Wink's system, I think Wink knows how to use him now, and I expect big things from Xavier McKinney. Big plays. I think a Pro Bowl year for McKinney.
Nice. Yeah, no, that's definitely, I mean, playing off of Dory Jackson, people might, you know, kind of go away from that, and he'll definitely get a chance to shine. Like, I'm really looking at a guy like Jalen Hyatt. Like, I think he's got some speed. He's got some burn, and that kid can definitely stand out in a wide receiver, you know, a wide receiver needy organization like the Giants. Like, they have Slayton. They got another year of Shep, but Hyatt can, I think, really can, if he can stay on the field and make some plays, I think he'll be a welcome addition.
Absolutely. And the knock on him was, he's not the best route runner. I mean, he'll improve that as the career goes along. But if you can outrun everybody, then you don't have to worry about running routes. And like you said, he's a blazer. He makes it look easy. So he's like deceptive, where he looks like he's just going nice and easy, and all of a sudden he's blowing past guys, which I think is going to be very important.
No, very true. You know who was an okay route runner? Randy Moss.
Yeah.
I'd say he's pretty good at that.
Yeah.
But, you
is
know,
that
we'll
why
get
Jalen,
you...
is that why he's wearing 84, Hyatt? Is that going to be Moss-esque?
That could be the case. You know, we'll call it Hyatt U.
So then put some straight cash, homie, on Jalen Hyatt winning Rookie of the Year then.
As long as he doesn't moon anybody, I am good with that. We'll get you out of here on this one, brother. We know that football games are won in the trenches. So who will be the most important offensive and defensive lineman this season besides Andrew Thomas and Leonard Williams?
I think on the offensive side of the ball, you don't want to put too much pressure on a rookie, but it's Schmitz at center. If he can come in and anchor that offensive line, it'll be a huge help. If you have two good tackles and a good center, you can get away with having below average guards, which that's not the case, but I think it might be. So definitely Schmitz on the offensive side of the ball. Defensive side, you want Ojulari to stay healthy because he's a force, but I really think it's Thibodeau. I mean, Thibodeau he's on the way to becoming a superstar, I believe. He had especially late in the year, he was really showing the type of presence he can be. The Commanders game, the Washington game, he wrecked the game. He was all over the place, scored a touchdown. And I think Wink loves him. He's got the knock on him in college was he had that college jog. He doesn't hustle. I don't see that at all. He's got a motor on him. He's all over the field. He plays the run. He does whatever Wink wants. So I think Thibodeau will be the breakout star there and the most important guy on defense.
And they're going to need him, you know, because Leonard Williams is going to get doubled. He's going to be the focus, but Kayvon Thibodeau definitely has what it takes to be a stud. And you know who's a stud? Danny Butler, the member of the in crowd. Lad, wonderful job, as per usual. You got anything going on at Tubby, brother? Like, what's up?
We have trivia every Tuesday, karaoke every Thursday, brunch Saturday and Sunday. A couple months ago, I was looking forward to a very busy October with, you know, both baseball teams playing deep into the fall, but obviously that's out. We'll just switch our attention to football Sundays now, and hopefully our two football teams can pick up the slack.
Hopefully, from your lips to God's ears. So, Danny Butler, a member of the in crowd, tried and true. And if you want to get into the action, if you want to become a member of the in crowd, hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com, or slide in those DMs on IG at faderoutepodcast or on X at faderoutednz. Danny Butler, pleasure as always, and we will definitely have you on again soon, brother.
Pleasure's mine, guys. Thank you so much. All the best.
Want to get in on the action? We want to hear from you. Hit us up, faderoutemail@gmail.com. Slide in our DMs on IG at faderoutepodcast. Drop us a DM on Twitter at faderoutednz. Comment on our YouTube channel, The Fade Route with DNZ. Questions, comments, picks, segment suggestions, you name it, we want to hear from you. Get at us, in crowd. The Fade Store presents the Alleged Superstar of the Week Award. All right, boys and girls, you know what time it is. It's time for the Alleged Superstar of the Week. Here's how it goes. We put up a poll on our Twitter account at FadeRouteDNZ, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote, and you vote. And the winner of said vote gets a shout-out on this here show and the coveted-ass trophy. And do you know who took home the coveted-ass trophy last week, D?
I don't.
Colin Coward.
Ah, that guy.
The list was so long and distinguished, we had to have two polls going concurrently. Our Twitter page, at FadeRouteDNZ. And note to Mr. Coward, proofread. But that was last week. This is this week. Who are your nominees for Alleged Superstar of the Week, D?
All right, first up, I've got the New York Jets. The team that was a quarterback away has felt the need to now add yet another elite player in Dalvin Cook. Can we stop saying this team was a quarterback away yet? New York Jets, you are my alleged superstars of the week. Next, New York sports radio hosts, plural, everyone from Boomer and Geo to DiPietro and Rothenberg have felt the need to take digs at Packers GM Brian Gutekunst. Every time they talk about Rodgers and New York Jets, they have to call him stupid. They have to call they have to say Gutekunst doesn't know football, etc., just because he traded Aaron Rodgers. The Packers needed to move on to Jordan Love. That's why they drafted Jordan Love. They sent Rodgers to a good situation. Hop off, everybody. New York sports radio hosts, you are my alleged superstars of the week. And number three, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Not only have you sunk lower in the standings since the All-Star break, but now Shohei is missing his next start due to arm fatigue. Oh, how the tables have turned. Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. You are my alleged superstars of the week. What do you got, Z?
Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, of Orange County, of California, of the United States of America, of Earth. That's going to look so bad when he walks away. That's going to look so bad when he walks away. I'm starting off, and you'll appreciate this. The New York Mets. Atlanta 21, Mets 3. Need I say more? Atlanta 21, Mets 3. And this is game one of the doubleheader. Danny Mendick gave up 8 runs in the top of the 9th inning. It was so over. How over was it? Nicky Lopez pitched the bottom of the 9th inning for the Braves. Got him out 1-2-3. That's all I gotta say. You couldn't put up a fight against a utility infielder who was mercy killing you because they had to save their bullpen for a doubleheader, and you still couldn't score. 21-3. Man, the Falcons did a good job beating down the Jets. Mets, my God, you've made this season unwatchable. Almost New York baseball in general has been unwatchable the past month. And this is just the biggest pus-filled zit. The latest big pus-filled zit. New York Mets, you are my alleged superstar of the week. Number two, James Harden. Calling out Daryl Morey, saying he's a liar and that you're never going to play for him. Just enough, man. Shit or get off the pot. Because guess what? He owns your contract. He can do what he wants with it. You sign that contract. You need to abide by that. And guess what? If you do that, if you show you're a good guy and a team player, teams will probably trade for you. Just throw that out there. I don't know why I'm still whispering. James Harden, you are my alleged superstar of the week. And number three, Max Scherzer. You thought I was going to go Sal Licata. No. Not Sal Licata. I've talked enough about him. Max Scherzer. Inning strikeout on a pitch clock violation. You figured to be happy. Inning's over. I can go to the dugout. I can rest. Proceeds to bitch out the ump. Max, I don't know if you know how this works, but a strikeout in your favor ends the inning. And that's one less pitch you have to throw. That's a good thing. Why are you yelling at the ump? Why? As usual, Max is showing that he's Mr. Congeniality. Max Scherzer, you are my alleged superstar of the week. We've made our case, ladies and gentlemen. Go to our X page at FadeRouteDNZ and vote. And vote, and vote, and vote. And for our nominees.
Just do better, boys. just do better.
Can't help but smile when you see a balloon. The simplest occasion is a party. Westchester Pop Stars, located in New Rochelle, New York, offers balloon styling and decor for all life's events. Birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, showers, school and corporate events, store openings, or just because. Westchester Pop Stars takes balloons and shapes them into works of art, creating decorative installations for your special occasions. No event is too big or too small, and their custom personalization service is top notch. Westchester Pop Stars is a private studio, quickly expanding. In-person consultation is by appointment only. Send an email to westchesterpopstars@gmail.com for more information or to schedule an appointment. No need to hire an event stylist. All you need is balloons. Currently servicing Westchester, Putnam, New York City, and Connecticut. To find Westchester Pop Stars, search for them on Instagram, Facebook, or Google.
Order up!
We continue our division by division breakdown in the NFL as we order up.
Order up, order up.
This week, we are going to order up the AFC South from 4 to 1. Who you got, Dave?
All right, your favorite division, the AFC South.
Oh, absolutely.
So, starting with Houston Texans, Stroud has looked raw in the preseason. Nico Collins is a 3 on most teams, and he's being forced into a 1. I see 2, maybe 3 wins this season for Houston. Number 3, the Indianapolis Colts. This Jonathan Taylor saga, man, it's just carrying on. He left again today to take care of personal matters. This is just getting uglier and uglier. I think Richardson will play well. I think he's gonna play well, but they're gonna finish in third. Number 2, the Tennessee Titans. People are doubting DeAndre Hopkins way too much. I think the Titans play well, but I see Derrick Henry breaking down the stretch. And number 1 in all your hearts, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence will excel under Doug Peterson in year 2 of his offense. He could be up for an MVP award. Calvin Ridley will have over 1,000 yards, probably over 1,300 yards receiving, double-digit touchdowns. Their defense will play well. I got Jacksonville number 1. What do you got, Z?
We're not that far apart. Mm. We're not that far apart. Fourth place, I'm going to go with the Colts. Especially if this Jonathan Taylor thing lingers further.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Richardson, not sold on. Mm-hmm. Right? He's got to prove that he is at least what Jim Irsay thinks he is. Right? You have Minshew there. He's a quality, capable backup. You have Pittman. You have McKenzie. Not bad. You have a pretty good offensive line. Defense, what do you have? You have Shaq Leonard. And you have DeForest Buckner. You have some okay pieces. I don't know if that offense is going to be able to make up for that defense, especially if Jonathan Taylor is not there for ball control. They need him, or they need to ship him out. One of the two. But I'm going with the Colts in fourth. Number 3, I'm going with the Texans. And not necessarily because of C.J. Stroud. Like, he's there. He'll get the first crack. Damian Pierce is very good. They brought in Devin Singletary. Robert Woods is there. Dalton Schultz came in the offseason. The offensive line's looking better. It's looking better. They can probably protect Stroud. I like what they're doing on defense. Will Anderson, Sheldon Rankins, Christian Kirksey. That secondary looks pretty decent. Looks pretty decent. Let's see what Coach Ryans can do. And if C.J. Stroud can develop and mature and take that step, then they're on to something. That'd be great. They already have a good running game. They're going to have the safety net in Dalton Schultz. They have Robert Woods if he can stay healthy. I know, big if. But I think the Texans are narrowly, we're talking like a game or two, better than the Colts. Number two, we're in agreement, the Tennessee Titans. I don't know who their quarterback is. Another one, Tannehill's going to get first shot, but it would not surprise me if Levis gets significant playing time, if Willis gets significant playing time, and that's going to be their downfall. That is going to be their downfall. Derrick Henry is another year older. I think his time is slowly coming to the end. He's not going to be able to take those hits that he used to be able to deliver. Week one last year kind of exposed him. The Giants were bouncing him around. So, yes, Hopkins is there. Burks is there. You know, you have some guys. But the defense is still going to play quarterback. The only thing that's keeping them in second place is that the other teams, those other two teams, are so bad. In theory, the Titans can be under 500 and still be in second place in this division. I can see that pretty well, that they can be under 500 and still finish in second place, just on the lack of strength in the remainder of the division. But that leaves, by default, number one, the Jacksonville Jaguars. We are in agreement on them. This team is loaded, and there is no reason, not one, that they cannot repeat as division champs and make more of noise. If they make more noise in the AFC, would it surprise me if they were in the divisional round? Not at all. Would it surprise me if they made it to the AFC title game? Might be a little bit of a stretch, but I can see it. It's possible. You catch a team at the right time. A healthy Travis Etienne. Calvin Ridley comes in. Calvin Ridley is an important add. I can definitely see big things coming out of Jacksonville this season.
This has been the Fade Route with D&Z. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Catch our podcast usually on Wednesday nights on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. So until next time, stay faded, everyone.
Time for us to run the go route, but we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of our podcast. If you like what you heard and want to hear more, be sure to like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Rate us 5 stars, leave us a review, turn on subscription notifications, and tell your friends. Spread the word, spread it wide.